Inspired by my own journey with mental health, I founded Girls Talk, our own safe space where we share, listen, and support each other. So get cozy and join me, Adjoa Burr, for some much-needed Girls Talk. Today we're revisiting the groundbreaking film 13 with none other than its visionary writer and director, Catherine Hardwicke. Despite being released over two decades ago, 13 remains as relevant and as impactful as ever. Catherine, welcome to the Girls Talk podcast. Oh, Catherine, where are you right now?
I am in Venice Beach, California.
Oh, well, so yeah. We're both in LA.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
So I would love for you to introduce yourself to our wonderful community.
Okay. Well, my name is Catherine Hardwicke. I'm the director of 13, Lords of Dogtown, Twilight, and several other movies and television series and things. And so I'm just excited to be here.
Just you just saying that just feels like, I mean, I'm in the presence of a proper icon.
Oh, thank you.
Today, we're going to be talking about the iconic film you wrote and directed, 13. I don't even know where to begin in kind of explaining what it meant for me at that point in my life. You know, I watched it at quite a confusing time in my own life. So, and I think that will probably resonate with a lot of people who are listening. It was like the backdrop for a lot of our kind of our own troubles and confusion and navigating our teens and early teens. But for those who haven't seen the film, and if you haven't seen the film, like maybe turn this podcast off, guys, and go and watch the film first. But for those who haven't seen the film, what is the film about?
So I wrote it with, co-wrote it with a 13-year-old girl, Nikki Reed. And Nikki, I had been out of town for like 6 months working on a movie in Canada. And then Nikki, I came back. She was a family friend. I knew her mom, her brother, dad, everybody. I came back and I saw her going through some very difficult times. I really almost saw like a dark cloud over the head of this girl that 6 months earlier had just been climbing trees. So I thought, okay, she's kind of hates her mom all of a sudden. She used to love her mom. She hates everybody in the world, but she doesn't hate me because I'm kind of like an auntie or something like that, right? So I thought maybe I can help her turn some of her negativity and confusion into something positive. Because she was at that time waking up at 4:30 every morning and doing like 2.5 hours of hair and makeup before she went to middle school, trying to be like a perfect J-Lo or, you know, whoever. She would put the magazine pictures by her mirror and do the makeup stuff. And so she was very concerned about her image and how she fit in. And I thought, wow, let's do something creative. Let me teach you how to surf. Let me teach you how to draw. Let's go to museums and draw. Let's do creative stuff. But she said, actually, I don't want to do those things that you like to do. I want to be an actor. Now, that scared me even more because I thought, oh, my God, you know, now you're even going to be more worried about how you look and everything. But that's what somebody wants to pursue. You got to encourage it. So then we went to acting classes. They were like a little too sophisticated for a 13-year-old girl. Finally, I said, we've got to create our own story.
Wow.
And I will direct it, even though I'd never directed anything, and you're going to star in it, even though she'd never acted. I said, that's the goal. Let's write our own movie. So we did. That was the plan. And we thought it would be a teen comedy. But I said, let's ground it in real stuff that you're going through so the comedy will come out of real things. Well, the more we worked on it, and her other friends would come over and hang out, go surf with us, and I would watch what all the different girls were going through, what their mothers were going through with them. And then I said, let's just write it about the real stuff. Let's not try to make it a comedy. If it's not funny, it's not funny. And so we decided to do that.
That is insane.
And it's really about the love triangle kind of between the mother, the daughter, and this best friend.
What was it like to be an observer of what kind of young girls were going through at that time? Like to be an auntie, to be someone she trusted to let into her environment in that way, but also to be an outsider, just kind of a voyeur watching this kind of destruction and this pressure and this kind of like, you know, I mean, you've also probably gone through it. We all have. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, did it feel like something you could relate to, having been obviously a young girl, but having been a 13-year-old, or did it feel kind of like alien and terrifying in a different way?
Well, it kind of felt like both, because
not
only Nikki, but her friends, another friend's daughter I was sort of mentoring too. So I would actually go to their schools and volunteer to teach like a little class on the biosphere or something. And the girls would come over and do a lot of like slumber parties and surf camps and crazy skits and stuff, fashion, wacky things. But so I could really relate and feel for what they were going through, especially when I went to the school and saw the way the guys were talking to them in the hall, just out there, the way, you know, the pressure, even at just a middle school in Santa Monica, was kind of outrageous, actually. But I could relate to them. I could relate to their parents, you know, not knowing where to draw the line, where to draw the boundaries. And of course, you could relate to the fact that, you know, a mother would tell her daughter, "Don't worry, you look great already, honey. All you need is smile and you'll look beautiful." Well, they know that's not really true. If they do put the hair, the makeup, the cool clothes, everything, you're treated different if you really dress up and do amazing things. So, you know, it was hard. Like, you get one positive thing from your mom a week, and then you get 10,000 advertisements a day minimum telling you to be this, be this, be this. So it was just fascinating, like watching kids navigate all that.
Yeah, I was younger when the film first came out, but it was like, as I got to that age, I was then introduced to a lot of the things that they were going through within the film. Mm-hmm. It's mad to me how relevant it still is. It doesn't feel dated. It feels so, and I think it just goes back to that kind of guerrilla style of how it was created in the first place. It's so grounded in reality and like authentic storytelling that it's like transcended through the ages and still feels like this very relevant piece of work that is about lived experience. And even age 31, I watch it and I'm like, this still makes perfect sense. You know, when I talk to young girls now, age 13, through the community, it's like we're still all going through the same stuff. Like, nothing's really changed. And why do you think the film has such a kind of lasting legacy?
There's several things. Obviously, since I wrote it with a 13-year-old girl and her mother, her friends were all involved, and we wrote it actually standing up. We did not write it sitting down. We improvised every scene. She would play herself. I would play her mom. We were moving all the time, listening to music, you know, going places as we created the scenes. And anytime something would happen, we'd almost just write that into the scene. Like, if I was like, "Nikki, we actually only had 6 days to write it before she went back to middle school over the Christmas holidays." And I'd say, "Nikki, we got to really concentrate here, okay?" And then she'd get a phone call from the boyfriend. And then she would be all excited, dancing around. And then 1 minute later, he'd say something that upset her. She'd burst into tears. She'd start yelling at him, you know, and then hang up the phone. And that would all be like in 30 seconds. She would have it, you know, five extreme emotions. And at first I would be mad, like, "Don't take that phone call. We have to write." And then I thought, wait a minute, that phone call is what this is about. We incorporated the phone calls. We incorporate the distractions, the ADHD, everything is in that movie. And so I think that's what made it vibrant. But also, I would go to Nikki's house. I'd try to be a mediator sometimes. Like, and so I would film at her house, like, her talking to her mom, her talking to her brother, her dad, follow into the room. And I actually really wanted to film it like war photography.
I love this kind of understanding that it was done in this such like kind of natural and guerrilla kind of way. How did you meet Evan Rachel Wood? How does she connected to the film?
So we had Nikki, and then we had to find the other girl. And so we reached out to the different agencies, and I was determined to film with a 13-year-old girl, or actually Evan had just turned 14 and Nikki just turned 14 while we were starting to film. So they were, I did not want an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old playing a teenager because that's such a raw age. And I knew it was going to be a lot more real. And they would be going, really, in real life, going through the things that are in the movie. So the actors would keep it honest and grounded. So we reached out. And then when Evan Rachel Wood, when her agent found out that Holly Hunter was going to do it, she really respects Holly. And so that made her feel safe enough, like that it's not going to be exploitative. It's going to have a beautiful quality and, you know, real and have be a meaningful film, you know. And when Evan came in, I was just like, oh my God, because, you know, I was worried maybe there's some of the content that she wouldn't want to do or her mother wouldn't want to do. And her mother said, listen, after Evan and I talked, the mother came in and said, Catherine, I just don't think you went far enough. Because to be honest, 13-year-old girls, what I did, what everyone's going through, it's more harsh than what you put in the script. I was like, oh, okay. Because if you think about it, nobody gets pregnant, nobody commits suicide, nobody has a car crash. And when we showed the movie to like juvenile judge groups that would have a juvenile judge or whatever, they would say, this is mild compared to what we see in court every day.
That is so mad. I mean, talking of those, like, the hard-hitting subjects and topics that this film kind of depicts and pulls apart, it's a rarity, and it's also done in such a glamorized way, and the way that you portrayed it was so harsh and raw and savage and terrifying, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I had my own kind of issues with self-harm that I've spoken about in the past, so it really, really resonated with me actually watching it back. But why was it so important to kind of depict that particular kind of subject?
I think that that is a reality for certain amount, certain women, certain kids, you know, are going through, and that's the only outlet that they could find that released the pain for them, even momentarily. And so I thought it was important to let that be part of the story and then let the mothers, and of course, that's almost the climax at the end of the movie when the mother finds out that that's what has been happening with her daughter, you know, and then the mother just loves her and just envelops her in, you know, intense love no matter what, kisses her scars. And, you know, that was a very, you know, emotional moment. You know, it wasn't solved at the end of the movie. Everything wasn't solved. Everything wasn't perfect. That's why we still had a scene where Evan Rachel Wood is screaming, you know, afterwards on the merry-go-round, and where it wasn't solved for Nikki, even though this was cinema therapy for Nikki to go through this movie and see the other side of her, what her mother was going through, because she kind of hated her mother at this time, but now she was kind of looking at that whole, the bigger picture, but it still wasn't solved. They still weren't like besties right after this movie, and her life wasn't perfect after the movie. You know, it's an ongoing process. We're all living through our own insecurities, pressures every day.
And I think it was so important, that end scene when she's screaming, and it's like, you know, far too often, and we see it now, it's not necessarily stopped. We have this kind of, it's romanticized, it's we are viewing these like very confusing lives and stories through quite a rose-tinted kind of view, and it all ends and it's happy and the families are happy and everything's, you know, beautiful and amazing, and that's not the reality of the situation. So it's like, it was so important actually that your story was rooted in something that was realistic, and I think that's why it has continued to resonate, amongst other reasons, why it's continued to resonate with people for so long. How do you think the narrative approach to teenage experiences has evolved from 13 to Euphoria? Like, have you watched it? Have you seen any kind of like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I've seen it. And you, you're absolutely right. It is absolutely very intense subjects, but it's in a beautiful way with the beautiful budget and beautiful crane shots. Of course, every filmmaker is envious of you know, how many, I think they had 28 days to shoot every, you know, it was amazing. And some of the subjects are super dark. You know, they do go places that are even darker and darker than we did, which is brave.
Do you, I mean, talking of, like, I suppose, drug culture, do you worry that shows like Euphoria glamorize drug culture and mental health issues?
You know, it's so interesting. Just the other day, I mean, this is the 20th anniversary of 13, so we've had a few screenings. Just the other day, somebody told me that, I know, somebody told me that they went to see the movie, and when they walked out, they said, oh my God, I'm never going to do drugs. They were a young teenager. But their best friend said, I can't wait to do drugs. So, you know, it definitely had different effects on different people, that's for sure. And I think, well, Oprah did a show about 13, and she had part of her show, she had 40 mothers and 40 daughters on there, and she had a therapist up there. And after they screened the movie, they talked, the parents, mothers and daughters would talk to each other, and they could talk about it in cinema therapy terms. Like, instead of saying, did you do this? It's like, what do you think when Evan Rachel Wood did that? Was that a good thing or a bad thing? So I think the idea that it gave a conversation, it gave an opportunity for conversations. I know schools, police stations, multiple places would show the movie and then have discussions afterwards. And that's important because people hadn't seen themselves on screen.
Oh, 100%. Even in the, you know, in the beginning of the film when she's almost kind of like acknowledged for the first time and she feels cool for the first time, yeah, and she's wearing, yes, you know, she's changed her outfit. It's like even something as like minute as that is so important for the way in which we as young women and men had to like kind of navigate our early teens. It was all about like how we were perceived by others. Our validation was always attached to like how people viewed us, and were we cool, and were we like worthy of the cool people's time? Do you know what I mean? And I think as you get older, obviously those things don't matter, but it's so important to not forget that. And I think that's something that we always try and do at Girls Talk. It's like, yes, we are, have really moved on from this way of life. You know, we're dealing with other things and other bigger responsibilities. But when you're 13, that is your world, and your world might seem small to other people, but at that point in your life it feels humongous and overwhelming and pressurized, and confusing. And things like the cool people accepting you at school, that's a really big deal. Having not lost your virginity, that's a really big deal.
There's one line, yes, I totally agree with what you're saying. And I don't know if anybody ever really outgrows that, because even adults are trying to get likes on Instagram for their outfits.
Oh, well, exactly. So, now we've got that 100%.
Even more. But I think there's one line that I thought was just so fascinating in the movie 13, when they're going to go shop on Melrose. She's excited. Her mom drives her and her new friend to Melrose, and the mom is worried, oh, am I allowed to let you shop with her alone? And she goes, please, mother, this is the most important day of my life. They're going shopping. But for her, it is the most important day of her life. This is the biggest deal. She's shopping with the cool girl. Don't blow it for me, mom. And just that, the sincerity, the passion about needing to be there and fit in. It was the most important day.
So, I mean, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, like 13 was the backdrop to my early teens, you know, and kind of followed me through that time. There were certain films that I think you can ask any young woman and they would have seen it, and it would have like resonated with them at a very important time in their life. But one thing you really kind of like, I suppose, delve into is the conversation around mental health. And that was at a time where we really weren't talking about it as much as we're talking about it now. How do you think 13, I suppose, contributed to the broader conversation on mental health that we're having now?
Well, I think we touched on one of the things already by Oprah doing a whole segment on her show about that with a mental health professional up there talking to the parents and kids. That was really great. A lot of people started using the term, some term cinema therapy, that, you know, you could show the movie in schools and then you could talk about things that, you know, are going on by talking about the movie. You could talk about deeper things. I mean, most movies are so manufactured that they're not as relatable, but this one was raw, like you say.
Yeah, and I love that. It's there's so much information out there that shows us what it feels like to see yourself depicted and shown in kind of media and culturally. Do you know what I mean? It's like to see yourself kind of mirrored back, to see someone telling your story and what that does in regards to making you feel less alone. It's, I mean, there's so much power in just that, you know. A lot of people in our community are creatives. And I just wonder, what advice do you have for people who are trying to create like realistic depictions of the world?
Yeah, it's tough. I felt like, you know, I had actually been trying multiple times. I'd written many other scripts and tried to get them made, and I would go make a little short like demo on that thing. I tried to get the money for it. I would do all these projects, and then each one of them, when I finally did a budget, oh, that's going to cost quite a bit of money to do that safely. Oh, that's going to cost too. That's a $9 million movie. Okay, write a cheaper one. Here's a $5 million. Finally, I'm like, okay, I'm not, at that time, wasn't super welcoming for women to be a director, you know, and a first-time director. Nobody wanted to say yes. So I kept kind of trying to write a more personal story. This was so personal and intimate that, you know, if you look at the movie, you can see that they're wearing, everybody, even the guys, are wearing at least one of my t-shirts or my clothes, or, you know, my car is in the movie. You know, it's just like, it's very personal. And I think if you keep it personal and grounded, something that you know about, that's a first step to being able to complete something, you know.
Oh, thank you so much, Catherine. Seriously, it's been such a it's a blessing to have you on the podcast. Like, thank you for all the incredible films that you've made and for making 13. It feels like I'm talking. I'm very starstruck right now. So thank you so much. Catherine, you're an absolute legend. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast. You can follow Catherine and her new projects on Instagram at Catherine Hardwick. And as always, mad, mad, mad amounts of love. We may have stopped talking, but that doesn't mean you have to. Talk to us on our Instagram at Girls Talk, or send us your poetry, essays, stories, artwork, or anything else you want to share at girlstalk.com. This week's podcast was produced by Girls Talk and Wicked Child Studio. Original music composed by Mikey Long. Mad, mad, mad love to Jo Malone London for their generous support of the podcast. And as always, we are always here and we're always listening. I'm Adjoa Boa, and this was the Girls Talk podcast.